Hello there, and thanks for choosing to sail with us on the seas of Planet LP. I'm Ted Astrogatto, and assisting me at the helm is John Young.
Hello, John. How are you, mighty crewmate?
All aboard, everyone, and enjoy a cruise across the yachting, rocking world with both of us.
Yes, it is episode 23, and this is going to be a smooth one, kids, because we're going to talk about a genre that used to be called the West Coast Sound, or adult-oriented rock, but most will know it by its current title, yacht rock. This type of music was very popular between the mid-70s and early 80s, with artists like Michael McDonald, Kenny Loggins, Boss Skaggs, Toto, Christopher Cross, Nicolette Larson, Steely Dan, and more. We've also got a special guest joining us, my good friend and a guy who has a deep knowledge of yacht rock, Jeff Giles. Jeff was the founder of Popdos, a pop cultural site that began in 2008, which I was a contributor to. He also worked for Rotten Tomatoes, Ultimate Classic Rock, Diffuser, Looper, and a whole host of music and entertainment sites. He's also the author of the 2013 book, Land View in the Afternoon, An Oral History of One Life to Live. Yes, the soap opera, One Life to Live. He talks to actors and people who are involved in the production of this show. It's actually a pretty compelling read. I read it back in 2013. I didn't know anything about the soap opera. I never watched it, but I was intrigued by this whole industry. So that's one to check out. And he's currently finishing up his first novel. Oh, and lest I forget, Jeff has a super fun and informative podcast called 1991, The Year AOR Ate Itself with Matt Wardlaw, and is a co-host on another podcast with Mike Joseph and Jason Hare called FM to MTV. That is quite a CV, isn't it, John?
Yes, I'm embarrassingly scamming my own right now. Scamming, of course, being the operative term there. Yeah, I've got to. My CV needs to get more V in it.
Yes, me too. After reading that, I'm a little intimidated to talk to him now.
No, you know,
maybe we shouldn't have him on as a guest. He's just gonna make us feel like idiots.
Hey, I wrote a song when I was 13 called "Pow."
Okay,
all right, and I'll play it for you if I can find a 2-stringed acoustic guitar somewhere in this office.
Anyhow, well, you want to get in touch with us? It's easy. You can email me at ted@planetlp.com, or maybe you'd like to get in contact with John. John, what's your email address?
It's easy enough. It's john@planetlp.com. You can also find me on the socials. I'm on Twitter at jcylcsw. On the Instagram, I think jylcsw. And why my Facebook is just John Young, I'll never know, because there's so many of us out there.
My Facebook is Ted Astrogatto. My Twitter handle is tasregatto, tasregaddoo. And if this is your first time listening to this podcast, let me do some brief introductions. John Young is the host of the 95.3 KUIC Morning Show in the delightful city of Vacaville, California, and has been since 1999. Me? I work for iHeartMedia in San Francisco for their news and traffic division. Those are our day jobs, but because we're music obsessives, we started this podcast to essentially drop the needle on a world of albums for other music obsessives who, well, obsess about this stuff. But this is a place for casual fans too. So whichever category you fall into, we are glad you are listening. So John, let's get that mainsail unfurled and start tacking left and right on our yacht rock cruise.
Ahoy, matey!
To quote from the musical comedy trio, The Lonely Island, I'm on a boat. It's going fast. I got nautical theme, Pashmina Afghan, and if we're on a boat like a yacht, we're going to need the right songs to fit the experience, and that's where the whole yacht rock genre finds its birth, through sailing, which is still popular, but seems to symbolize a kind of Southern California activity in the 70s and early 80s. But the genre is more than songs about sailing. Many of the artists who are lumped into the yacht rock category had huge top 40 and adult contemporary hits that, at the time, weren't thought of as the butt of jokes. Indeed, it wasn't until 2005 when a low-budget video series called Yacht Rock made its debut that the term yacht rock took on a more comedic tone. Flash forward to 2015, and public perception of the genre starts to change from those who were in on the joke to those who like the songs because, well, they're catchy and often relaxing. To talk about some yacht rock songs that really smooth our sails, we welcome Jeff Giles to the Planet LP podcast. Hiya, Jeff.
Hey, guys. Thanks for inviting me.
Good to have you. Jeff and I have known each other since 2002. When we connected and started becoming friends, we started talking about music. And one thing that I knew about Jeff pretty early on is that he liked a lot of the music that is lumped into the yacht rock genre. I'm older than he is, but at the time I said to him something along the lines, "You like a lot of music that's like 10 years older than me. You're like my oldest brother." And it's like the same music he likes. And you said something along the lines of, "Well, your oldest brother's got good taste." So
yes. Well played, Jeff. Well played.
Very nice. Why do you think that this yacht rock stuff is so popular the first time around?
I have to be clear here. I was not there, or at least I was not of music buying age when these artists were initially popular. I was born in 74. My sort of entry point into all of this probably came through albums released by artists who were considered part of that genre after it faded away.
Okay.
But I think the first tape that I ever spent my own money on was Every Turn of the World by Christopher Cross.
Nice.
85, I think it peaked at 198 on the charts or something like that. Nobody bought it.
Just not you, really, apparently.
Just me. Yeah. I was the one. I got it on the Billboard chart. It wasn't like I was a fan of his prior. I don't even know why I bought it. It was just something that I kind of took a flyer on. And
you lost a bet.
No, that was my favorite album for years. I wore out the tape. I actually broke the tape and I had to splice it back together. That's how much I listened to it.
What was the single off of that? Was there a single?
There was the title track. There was a song called Charm the Snake that is sort of a rap song.
I need a drink.
I need to hear this. And I need to watch you drink while I hear this.
Yeah. I think the thinking behind this was, I don't know how well acquainted either one of you are with his music, but he's a really talented rock guitarist.
Yes.
And that has been kind of backgrounded in his reputation because he's known for making such soft songs and, like, you know, performing at the Oscars in a tux and shit like that. But I think the idea with this album was to emphasize that part of his persona. I'm going to oversell it here, but it's more harder edged Christopher Cross record than you might be expecting.
Right. This guy's a smoking guitar player. Nobody realizes that. I would have recommended you buy the earlier records, but look what you did. And you're a trailblazer now, Jeff. That's awesome.
Right. And I think that was the case with, you know, not that Chicago's a yacht rock artist, but, you know, I listened to their stuff in the 80s and they kind of made my way back. And that was the case with a number of these other acts. So it wasn't like I grew up as a yacht rock enthusiast. It was just that axis of the top 40 was something that I gravitated towards. I was more into the melodic, the smoother stuff, the more produced stuff than like anything that would have been a little more aggressive on the charts at that time.
Gotcha. Smooth sounds.
I have come to I've come to absorb those earlier records and have an appreciation for them. As for why they were popular, man, that's a question, right? I mean, it's pretty fluky that these artists and these songs were as popular as they were. You're talking about artists who, by and large, were not terribly photogenic.
That's so kind, too. And Christopher Cross, the ultimate example of that. I mean, to some degree, you know, that, hi, I'm soft, I'm plain, I've got a bad haircut, but I'm a smoking guitar player. Let's do something.
Right. I kind of have a beard.
Kind of not. Yeah.
Been trying to grow one since I was 16.
Yes.
We're being so catty. God, it's not
this
right.
This joke might be kind of obscure, but somebody once referred to him as the Marie Provost of the MTV era.
That is a bit of an obscure one. You're going to have to explain that one to me.
She was a silent film star. Her career was ruined when the talkies came along.
Okay.
And, gotcha.
Ultimately, the legend about her is that she died alone and her dogs ate her corpse.
Oh, my word. Wow.
There's a great Nick Lowe song about her. The chorus goes, "She was a winner who became the doggie's dinner." She never meant that much to me, poor Marie. But anyway, yes, Christopher Cross, total poster boy for what happened when MTV took over and you needed to look a certain way. A lot of heavily bearded men in V-neck sweatshirts, a lot of velour, and a lot of funky chord changes. This is very musically literate music. It's interesting, you know, in retrospect, that it latched on to top 40 as much as it did. I don't know how serious this answer will be for your purposes, but I give a lot of the credit for this to Michael McDonald.
Yes. Talk about a beard.
Yeah.
Talk about a
beard.
Or, an amazing voice too.
Has anyone ever counted how many times he's showed up as a co-vocalist on these songs? Exactly. I'm sure they have.
Really? He's the through line for all of this stuff.
Right.
You know, a Midwestern guy who's heavily featured on a lot of West Coast records and also came up with two of the dirtiest, nastiest, snarkiest East Coast guys that you could think of, particularly in terms of being peripheral to yacht rock, the guys in Steely Dan.
I was listening to a playlist on Apple Music, which was called Yacht Rock. Apple put it together. And after a while, it was just like, Michael McDonald is showing up like every other song on these things. It's just
McDonald, one of the few guys who could sing without using consonants, and you still were totally wrapped up in what what was that? I don't care. It sounds so good, and it's so melodic. I'm going to roll with it.
The G and peg is not really pronounced, is
not
it?
Really. Sort of like, you don't need to.
It's just sort of like a
We're just looking for vowels here, okay? Come on, man.
I got to take a pause for a moment to say, McDonald, one of the most unique and even often brilliant lyricists in that genre. I mean, he was a guy who was not afraid to not rhyme. His storytelling skills. I mean, like, listen to the opening verse of What a Fool Believes. I mean,
oh, yeah.
That tells a story right there. Like, that's a one-act play.
Sure. Taking It to the Streets is still an anthemic when I hear it. I mean, I can, you know, take it out and put it right into 2019 and feels, you know, feels fresh.
Which is, it makes it a shame that you just hear, roo, 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 roo.
You don't know me. I think we got to have that, like, a Michael McDonald off, you know, everybody tries to do their best Michael, you know,
just back off on the consonants, you'll be all right.
But during that era, he was so heavily featured. You know, if you had a track that featured him or that sounded like maybe it featured him, or that maybe it was written by him, paging Robbie Dupree, you were gonna get on the radio. So that's my answer.
So let's pivot to some songs that are some of your favorites from the genre. Group of songs, whatever order you want to put them in, that represent the best of yacht rock. And maybe a brief explanation why.
You asked me this question over email. And so as I have been on the water here during my family vacation, I've been thinking about it. I've been thinking specifically about the aspect of yacht rock that is kind of unsavory, which is that I think some of the best yacht rock songs contain a real component, if not an emphasis on kind of an exclusionary aspect to it. Mm-hmm. There's whether you want to call it aspirational or exclusionary, like there's a bent to these songs that says, like, I'm here experiencing things that most of you do not have the means to experience. Like, who the fuck is ever going to ride in a yacht?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a real 1% aspect to this entire genre. The best examples of it, I think people kind of tend to mix up yacht rock and like Mellow Gold. But Mellow Gold is much more focused on guys who can't stand up for themselves having their hearts broken. And I think yacht rock is much more focused on the finer things
and
in life.
And escaping.
Yes.
I mean, you could take Southern Cross by Crosby, Stills, and Nash, right?
Wow. I mean,
those were guys who were not above flaunting the stuff that they had access to, right?
Exactly.
In a lonely bar in Avalon, I tried to call you because I spent a lot of time in Avalon, which is where I hang out when I'm not recording with the boys.
Yes.
Thank you, Stephen Stills. I got you. All right.
So what's a good example of these sort of darker, escapist tones that you're talking about?
How about On and On by Stephen Bishop?
Okay.
First fucking words in the song, down in Jamaica.
Right, but it's a good point.
Here's a guy.
Pretty women.
Yes, and he's whining about having his heart broken. Yeah. He's in Jamaica.
Not a bad place to be.
This is a little bit of a tangent, but I think this kind of begins that vein of music that I think most of it you hear in the soft jazz of the era.
Mm-hmm.
You throw in maybe some steel drums, or you give a song an exotic sounding title. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of records by like David Sanborn and Bob James, you know, that had these titles like Maputo.
That was off Double Vision, right? That was Double Vision, so Maputo. Yes. That was the first track off Double Vision.
Yes.
Jeff
makes
a great point here, which is it's very exclusionary and it's very exotic. And if you want to be part of the club, it's going to cost you a little money to get into the secret society we've set up here in this particular tune.
Stephen Bishop, he's down in Jamaica. What's another, another one in this list of yours?
I was thinking of Give Me the Night by George Benson. You know, this is
really
one that,
okay.
Well, he's not in Jamaica.
No.
But he is describing a situation in which everybody is having a very good time. I'm imagining myself on a yacht. Sun's gone down. There's lots of cocaine.
little white wine and cheese to go with it.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. You got to have the white wine. Yeah. You got to have the white wine. And maybe I'm wearing a V-neck velour sweater.
With too much body hair.
Absolutely.
Okay. Absolutely.
Maybe I have applied mascara to my chest.
Sure you have.
Yeah, you know, to accent it. I wanted to throw that in there as like a little bit of a left field addition. Also because Yacht Rock, very, very white.
It is. That's the other thing about it. I was looking at the, like, I was going through a lot of sort of internet research on this, and I'm like, there aren't a lot of black folk in Yacht Rock, and there are not a lot of women either. It's bearded white guys who want to escape.
Making it all the uglier from where I'm sitting on the bridge here. Come on, man.
So we got two.
How about Summer Breeze by Seals and Crofts?
Okay.
No.
Another song that you could absolutely listen to on a boat of any size at any time of day and really feel that.
These aren't guys that punch the clock at this point.
No. Yeah.
The jasmine's in bloom, buddy. That's what I'm concerned about right now. Okay.
Right, as soon as that jasmine starts to bloom,
that's when I take off to the harbor and get on that fucking boat and get moving. All right.
God. Seals and Crofts. Okay. Sensing a theme, right? You're weaving this theme together. Here we go.
Nice.
I am going to add one here that is not about a good time necessarily. It's probably the happiest song of the era that you would hear him on, but I had to put McDee in here. So I chose Real Love by the Doobies.
Wow.
Real Love. I don't know that one very well. Did that chart very high?
Yeah. It was one of the last hits that the...
Wait, it's starting to come back to me. I'm starting to hear the chorus in my mind. So.
Yes. And then for my fifth pick, I appreciate the fact that neither of you chose this. Thank you for letting me know by giving me access to your list ahead of time.
Sure.
I have to choose Sailing by Christopher Cross.
Okay.
And what else can be said about Sailing by Christopher Cross?
Other than it takes you away?
Sure.
Not a West Coast song, I have to say. He was a kid who grew up in Austin. And apparently this song was really born of some genuine personal pain that he had. He didn't have a good home life, but there was this family friend or whoever that would give him a place to go when he needed some place to be. That's what Sailing is about. But it really is literally about escape in a way that is, again, rather exclusionary. You know, not very many people have the option to just go sailing whenever they feel like they need to get away from the world for a while.
Right. Who do you think you are? The Kennedys? Come on, man. Jeez.
Let me get some chatter.
Yeah, somebody get something. Unmoor my boat. I've got to go do some thinking. Okay.
You've interviewed Christopher Cross as a music journalist, right?
I kind of knew him on a personal level for a while. Yeah. I've spoken at length with him. It's been a long time, but yeah, I have.
And did he talk about the sort of the underpinnings of the song Sailing to you? Did he, or was that already sort of public knowledge with other music journalists talking to him about the song?
At the time that I was talking a lot to him, it was all really kind of around a record that he put out in 1998 called Walking in Avalon, which kind of goes with our theme, actually, of, you know, people broadcasting that they have access to things that other people do not. Nobody else can go to Avalon except for Christopher Cross and his Lady Fair. But no, we didn't really talk too much about the early stuff, at least beyond, like, you know, he told me some things about the way his contract was structured and favors that Irving Azoff did for him in that respect early in his career. But most of what we talked about was his then current stuff and also his deep concerns about Y2K.
I remember that you telling me he said to buy gold, sell everything and buy gold.
And bury it in my yard. Yes.
And bury it. Right. And I think the time you told me this story, we had just gone through the Great Recession. And I said, he was right. You fool. You should have listened to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although, you know, he's been divorced since then. I think if you're splitting up from your wife of however many years and you're trying to abscond with your gold, it's kind of difficult to do if it's buried in your yard.
So, Jeff, as we wrap up, I wanted to ask you really quickly about your novel that you're publishing. How's that going?
I've written it. I took some time earlier this year to work on the second draft. Now it's looking at the long and very emotionally harmful process of trying to find an agent and a publisher.
And a publisher, right. Give the folks the title, at least the working title, because sometimes when you ink a publishing deal, they say, well, we get rights to name it. But right now, what is it called?
I wrote it under the title Langley Powell and the Society for the Defense of the Mundane. It's about a guy who spends his entire adult life as a debunker of the paranormal. He becomes world renowned. He becomes kind of a celebrity for doing this. And then one day he's walking down the street and a piano falls on him and he dies. And he is very annoyed to discover that he has become a ghost.
I want to reserve my copy right now.
I was fortunate to have read an early draft of it, at least the first draft. I loved it. I thought it was so good. I had notes for Jeff, and he took them and probably threw them in the garbage, but that's okay.
You're his former professor, Ted. He probably seriously.
No. Absolutely.
But I'm looking forward to seeing what the final product looks like.
Thank you. Me too.
Well, when you get it done, you come back on the podcast and talk about it. Well, we'll go smooth sailing with some more yacht rocking in the background. Jeff Giles, thank you so much for coming on the Planet LP podcast.
Thank you, Jeff. For inviting
me. Thanks a lot.
What did you think of that? That was pretty fun, huh?
It was lighthearted. I loved what we did with the series, but I think maybe we needed to have a little bit of a guffaw, sort of sitting around drinking, swearing a little bit. He was great, but that gave us a chance to be a little bit loosey-goosey, which I think was good.
Well, I think it's time to load up a couple rails of Coke and drink some white wine and go on a lightning round with our own Yacht Rock top five. Not really top five, just the five songs that we had picked. So, John, you first, my friend.
Thank you. I'm about to steer this boat right into an iceberg, Ted, because everything that Jeff had said about Yacht Rock being this sort of exclusionary musical style, and that's what differentiates it from Mellow Gold or whatnot, I'm going to take you on a little bit of a journey here. My impression of Yacht Rock is it's mellow. It may be exclusionary. It's a lot of old white dudes and beards. But the thing that makes it rock is you throw in some serious guitar to an otherwise pallid, boring, tapioca pudding style of music. I'll throw my first one out at you is Diamond Girl from Seals and Crofts.
Yeah, we're talking about Seals and Crofts earlier.
Right. Jeff had mentioned Summer Breeze as being sort of a perfect yacht rock song. I agree. But if you want another perfect yacht rock song that talks about diamonds, that's exclusionary. But then you drop in this guitar solo out of blow and those little guitar riffs, the bam, bam, ow, boo, boo, you know, against the flute part. Then all of a sudden, you've got a guy like me who's a guitar player and a Kiss and AC/DC fan, all this other stuff going, why am I tapping my toes to this? Because of the effing guitar part you dropped in there, Seals and Crofts. That's why Diamond Girl gets into my list here.
Okay, so with me, sometimes it's the drums that gets me, and mine is Boss Gags' Lowdown, which has that great funky drum. Jeff Porcaro, who goes on to be part of Toto, even the bass player, David Hungate, who does that great bass line throughout the song.
The bass line is the song. I mean, it's awesome.
He's also in Toto, but if you listen to the first part of that drum that brings in the rhythm, it's so good. And it's, you know, it's jazzy, it's funky. Boz has got a unique voice. It really stood out in the top 40 at the time. It's a hit. And at the time, the guys didn't even think it was going to be a hit. They're all like, there's no way that's going to be the single. And it ended up being a single and a very successful one at that.
Absolutely.
What's your next one?
It absolutely earned a spot on your list. Mine, we're going to go back to Christopher Cross real quick, because although poor Jeff started his journey in 1985 after poor Chris had, you know, maybe shot the proverbial yacht rock wad, I'm going to go back to his 1980 record, which has Ride Like the Wind on it, which is not only another Michael McDonald guest slot there, he's singing the backup. It's a great song, but again, it's a little mellow. It does have good drums, by the way. It does have a good beat to it. Then what happens at the end? Christopher freaking Cross straps on his double neck Gibson and smashes down a solo that brings the song to a conclusion in a way that I don't care how yacht rock you are, you know, Mr. Captain and Tennille hat on, you're going to rock to this song. Ride Like the Wind. If you don't have it yet, download it. It's yacht rock that rocks.
That it does. I'll give you that. Mine doesn't so much rock, but it's such a great duet. It's Kenny Loggins and Stevie Nicks, Whenever I Call You Friend. The first solo hit for Loggins, believe it or not, in 1978, and he co-wrote the song with Melissa Manchester, of all people. But he gets Stevie Nicks to sing on the song. And to me, what makes this song the smooth rock classic is the pairing of Loggins and Nicks. It's really a nice contrast. Kenny can sing pretty high up there, right?
Yep.
But Stevie, who isn't known really to belt, you know, she's not really a belter in terms of her vocal style, except for Gold Dust Woman, maybe, but she really pushes herself vocally on this. And I know that Loggins asked her to do a lot of takes on this song, but I really like how she belts at the end of the song. I've never seen such a beautiful sight right towards the end.
Yep.
She really brings it. And so that just adds the right kind of variation that really elevates the song and at least for me, it keeps things interesting for the duration of it, which isn't that much longer after she sings that part.
Right.
That's mine. That's one of mine.
That is a great pick. I'm going to throw a curveball at you. It's Firefall's 1978 record, Strange Way, parentheses, To Tell Me You Love Me. Again, Firefall, known as a very mellow band. I think they're still together, too, which freaks me out. But they're still out there doing touring. One original member, the Glockenspiel player, is the original guy. And that's a joke. The reality is this song combines that flute thing that Firefall was fairly famous for with aggressive guitar. At the end, they do that teaser thing where they kind of play it mellow, and then all of a sudden, I think their guitar player, Jock Bartley, which I just love that name. Hey, Bartley, Jock, come on over here and knock down some hardcore power chords at the end of this song. And it takes what's a doughy, soft, kind of lame-ish rock tune into, oh, wait, you got to wait till the end of the song because that's where the rock guitar comes in. And that's why that gets on my list.
Okay, I'll have to check that one out. Mine isn't going to be too much of a surprise when I mention Steely Dan, because Steely Dan's Asia was one of my top picks for the albums of the 70s. And I've talked a lot about Asia on that previous episode of our top threes. There's so much to love and very little to hate on this record. Asia, the song, is just a tour de force, really. And the standout performances from jazz legend Wayne Shorter on saxophone and drum master Steve Gadd doing some amazing soloing during the ride out. This certainly starts out smooth, but it ends on this jazzy samba vibe that I just wanted to hear it over and over. I just think it's great stuff.
And talk about a song I played over and over again with a great ride out from 1976's Hotel California, ladies and germs. I'm talking about New Kid in Town, which was one of the top singles off the Hotel California record. And the reason it's a yacht rock song is because it's a freaking yacht rock song until Don Felder brings in that da-na-na. Where you been lately? Da-na-na. Those hardcore power chords. He plays all the guitars on this song, by the way. Joe Walsh, who's the other guitar player that gets all the credit in that version of the Eagles, is actually playing Fender Rhodes keyboard and organ on that song.
Really?
Weirdly enough. Yeah. So that made that. And I love when you describe the ride out, because it's a term I should use more as a musician, and I never do, and it completely explains what's happening. That ride out, you're listening for and of course the story of New Kid in Town is interesting, the way Glenn Frey sings it. It's pretty cool. But it makes my list because of that guitar. You're waiting for that guitar to hit at the end. It's almost a Nirvana thing. It goes from quiet to da-na-na, and you're sucked in.
My next pick is actually two songs, so I'm kind of cheating, but it's from the same artist. It's Gary Wright, Love is Alive, and Dreamweaver from 1975. One song grooves, that's Love is Alive, and the other one is trippy. And I had a difficult time choosing one or the other because I like them both so much. It's interesting to hear this lumped into yacht rock because I don't really feel like this is yacht rocky music because it's all very different from what I think the genre is. But both songs did really well on the charts. They're still played on classic rock radio. And it's kind of ironic since these songs are considered yacht rock. But Dreamweaver was supposedly written after Gary Wright accompanies George Harrison to India and had kind of a spiritual experience, and that informed the actual song. After that, I don't think he ever had a hit because he changed his style of music. Maybe he had maybe one or two minor hits, but after that, his whole style of music changed because of that trip to India. And the song Dreamweaver is really about that. Well, so there it is.
His connection to George Harrison, going back to he was on George Harrison's first solo record, All Things Must Pass. Those keyboard parts are Gary Wright. I mean, so he's got a deep connection there. And of course, Dreamweaver was my sixth grade. Like, we had a fake graduation kind of in the multi-purpose room. We had a dance, and that was the first slow dance I ever slow danced with somebody. Oh, wow. Was Dreamweaver. I wish I could remember that poor girl's name. I want to send her an apology note. My final record, Ted, talk about yacht rock and hard rock all kind of melded into some big gooey ice cream sundae. It's Rosanna, Toto's record that came out in 1982 on their Toto 4 album. Mm-hmm, Steve Lukather is killing it, not only on the guitar, the solo on the ride out, as my friend Ted would say, is stunningly awesome. I mean, it's Zeppelin-esque. I mean, he is bending notes and he's going crazy and he's playing, he's shredding really. But he's also trading lead vocal on this song. So you get a little picture of Steve Lukather as a singer, and as much as it's a horn song and it's got that yacht rockish vibe to it until the end, people, when he lights that Les Paul on fire. He's in fuego with this song. It's one of my favorite songs to this day. And when the program director is not listening, I often will play it on my morning show against all, you know, what are you doing? That's not Katy Perry. I know, but there's something great about this tune. And it's an awesome album, but Rosanna, one of my favorites ever.
That's a great one. That's a great one. My last one is I'm Not in Love by 10cc that came out in 1975 from the album The Original Soundtrack. They took the song, and I was researching how they came up with it. It was originally a bossa nova tune, and then they refashioned it into this immersive experience with a bunch of layered voices throughout the song. And then that whispered voice saying, be quiet. Big boys don't cry. Big boys don't cry. Which I found out from the wiki on the song. You should read the wiki on this. This is kind of interesting. It's the voice of the secretary at the studio. Her name is Kathy Redfern, who had to be coaxed into doing the recording. She walked into the studio to whisper something to band member Eric Stewart that he had a phone call. She says, excuse me, Mr. Stewart, you have a phone call. And then that made Lal Cream jump up and say, that's the voice. That's the voice we need right now. And she's on there. So it's these layered vocals throughout there. And it's just this kind of immersive experience, like I said. And I think it would be great if it was ever mixed in Dolby Atmos. And Dolby Atmos is that total 360 sound. You go to an Atmos theater and they've got speakers on the ceiling and on the floor and all this stuff, and it comes at you in an X, Y axis. Is that what you're looking at? Yeah. So right. And then the title of the song, right? He's Not in Love.
No. You know, it's a depressing. I mean, it is a depressing great pick because that's a great song. And I love that little the snippet about the secretary, you know, getting paid, you know, 10 quid to come in and lay a vocal track down for him. But you're right. This song has sounded ethereal to me, even on AM radio. They did a pretty good job of manipulating at least the listener into getting floating along with this song. It's one of my faves for sure.
And it was also pretty noted for the studio technique of looping the sounds of tapes, tape loops, real looped tapes, 12 feet of tape looped around the studio so they could have those vocals. And it was almost like they created its own instrument. They had 48 vocals layered on a chromatic scale so they could go in and out. And they were just at the recording desk fading in and fading out those voices throughout the entire song. It's pretty amazing when you think what they did as far as the production of it. Well, my friend, that was fun and different. And now I think I might be putting together a Yacht Rock playlist.
I have a bunch of new entries to my ongoing Yacht Rock playlist. Thanks to you. Thanks to Jeff. And any suggestions that listeners have too, I love it. We love to get emails. We love your feedback. Let us know what you think.
John and I will be back next time. Our thanks again to Jeff Giles, who took time from his vacation to be on the podcast. And you can catch him on his two podcasts, 1991, The Year AOR Ate Itself with Matt Wardlaw, and FM to MTV with Mike Joseph and Jason Hare. Well, we're going to dock the boat at the Planet LP Pier and disembark for now, but we'll be back soon to chat more about a world of albums. John, so long, my friend.
Ahoy, matey!
Until next time. Bye for now.